sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young, and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up!
As I walk through the north of death, they souls gone, but they voices left. They talk to me every chance they get. I gotta make it for the chance they miss. Shit, we all don't get a chance like this. It's hard living, homie, more than music. See a Neef dog who you got us confused with. True shit, we about to do it. Neefy, don't lose it. Follow the flow, homie, like you follow the blueprint. This deserved a
bonfire.
Okay, welcome. Bienvenue to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, aka B Blizzak, aka Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com on the web. And if you happen to speak French, aka Monsieur Grand Papa B in the place. Before I officially start the show, I need to remind you listeners that this podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green, and waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. I'm representing and holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. This episode is being recorded on January 15, 2023. What time is it? 12:41 p.m. This episode is also brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. Yeah, maybe I should. Kind of deserved a more fire right there. All right. Hey, today's show, let's start out with a bit of history. I want to acknowledge that today is officially Martin Luther King's birthday. He was born on January 15, 1929. I have this bad habit of not trusting my brain when it's reminding me of information, but old age will do that to you kids, right? The reason I went with the title, well, this was going to be the title of today's episode, but I'll explain the title of the episode in the personal thought section. But this section is titled "By the Time I Get to Arizona." And that's actually a title by Public Enemy. And it's a track Reagan. Reagan, President Reagan, had officially made MLK Day a national holiday. Okay, the first time it was observed was on January 20, 1916, and Reagan signed into bill. Yeah, he did that in 1983. Interesting. Okay, in 1983, President Ronald Reagan signed a bill creating a federal holiday to honor King for his commitment to equal rights and justice for all. observed for the first time on January 20, 1986. So, 3 years late, but whatever. That's how these white folks do. And in January 2000, 23 years ago, Martin Luther King Jr. was officially observed in all 50 states. So by that track, by the time we get to Arizona, was Arizona and New Hampshire? New Hampshire? Anybody say that right? New Hampshire. One of the states I don't know a rapper from. If they haven't made a movie in your state, no, that's not true. If a rapper didn't come from your state, then I don't know your state. If a tree falls in the wood and no one's here, New Hampshire. I feel like Hampshire. Not that I expect people from that state to listen to. New Hampshire. Oh, okay. Anyway, man, fuck them niggas. They were reluctant to, they didn't want to celebrate black man's birthday. And I love this quote by Sister Soulja. She says that, what did I write? Yeah, Public Enemy believe in the track, by the time we get to Arizona, Sister Soulja had a quote where she says, Public Enemy believes that the powers that be in the states of New Hampshire, and Arizona have found psychological discomfort to paying tribute to a black man who tried to teach white people the meaning of civilization. And I'm going to add to that. So that's where that song came from. It was their protest song against it. But that's not my point. My point is, happy birthday, Martin Luther King. The official holiday is tomorrow in the United States. In Canada, it's a day that white people like to use to pretend like they give a fuck about black people. It's not a holiday, but they will acknowledge it. Say, oh, let me quote some Dr. King. Some Dr. King quotes. Yeah, man. I rarely trust a white person to properly quote Dr. King. They'll use the right word, but they'll fuck up the intention. And that's why Dr. King wouldn't have wanted us to wear a mask. You know, shit like that. It just drives me nuts. I feel like reading this. Like, I was getting my information before I started recording. I felt the need to just look him up. Because I take for granted that I know Martin Luther King, but I know his name. But not really, like, if you ask me to explain, I'll be, yeah, man, he did a speech and shit, and then the white man killed him. Yeah, so I was going to read this first paragraph that I found on National Geographic site. And the article starts with, who was Martin Luther King Jr.? And so he goes, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. is a civil rights legend. In the mid-1950s, King led the movement to end segregation and counter prejudice in the United States through the means of peaceful protest. His speeches, some of the most iconic to the 20th century, had a profound effect on the national conscience. That's the part that phrase is what got my attention. Had a profound effect on the national consciousness. Through his leadership, the civil rights movement opened doors to educational employment that had long been closed to black America. I want to give a shout out to Ava. I think, you know what's going on? It's because I realize I'm nervous when I'm recording, and that's why I'm always like, don't trust my ability to remember shit. What was the name of that movie again? I had it, Glory. Yeah. The director there, she made a movie called, damn it. No, it wasn't called Glory. The song was called Glory. The movie was called Selma. Oh, man. Don't worry, guys. I'm waking up. What time is it? Yeah, Selma. Okay. Ava Duvernay. Right. She made the movie Selma, and I remember I was hesitant to go watch it, and because I had convinced myself that, look, what could you possibly tell me about Martin Luther King that I don't already know? And I'm not sure why I went, how I managed to change my mind. But I ended up going, and I'm glad that I did. And what I love about the movie is Sister Ava DuVernay, brought up or focused, added to the contribution of women to the cause of Martin Luther King. Yeah, man, usually when we talked about Martin Luther King, we never talked about, we never talked about that shit, you know? And it's a dope movie. But my point is, by reading that first description in addition to it, is I like that line of his leadership, the civil rights movement, had profound effect on the national consciousness. I'm thinking about this joke by, I forget this comedian name, and he was talking about, just because I'm blanking out, he was talking about how, he was making a joke about how when Jesus came to the scene and would say shit like, hey, do unto others like you would have done to you. That's an effect on national consciousness, because at that time I was like, yo, that's some revolutionary shit. What the fuck? Anyways. And so Dr. King here is like, I don't think it's segregation. I think it's bullshit. No, don't get me wrong. I think there's a lot of black people who can, there's arguments that I understand being made to how segregation, ending segregation kind of fucked over black folks and benefited white people more than black folks. I mean, white people think that black people fought so we can take the bus with them, so we can be their buddies, so we can, so we can be cyber. Like, white supremacy will do that to white people. They haven't convinced that black people fought so they can be, benefit from their presence. That's what it was all about. So we could be all good friends so our kids can play together and shit like that. And it was things like, hey, our school sucks. We would like to, if you're not going to fund their school, if we can't fund our own schools, then we would like to send our kids to, we want our kids to have the same opportunities that your kids have. Shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, if we can't build it for ourselves, then let us use the available resource that's available already. That's what it was all about. I think about how growing up, I grew up with French kids, French Canadians, and I think a lot about how the teachers spoke about my parents immigrating to this country. And I swear, man, these white folks are convinced that, we swam across the Atlantic Ocean up to Canada just so we can embrace, so we can be blessed by their presence. It's like, nah, where we lived, it's either we fucking starved, we just wanted opportunities for our kids, so we brought them here. My blood pressure's going up already. Hold on a second, let me try to calm down some water. Yeah, I'm getting distracted. Yeah, I was trying to honor Martin Luther King's birthday. Wish him a happy birthday. Remember the man's name. And think about what it must have taken to be. Like, it gets me how homeboy lived his life. I don't think he woke up wanting to die on that famous, April 4th, 1968? Is that when he died? I don't think that was in his attention. I think he was just living a life like the rest of us are doing. And, when you get to those moments where you feel something is right and something is wrong and you can't get yourself to, like, not do anything about it. And he just spoke up. That's all he did. I think in his mind, he was just, look, if you're asking me, do I like Coke or Pepsi, I'm going to tell you the truth. He spoke out for a... I was going to say, he didn't mind his own business. He interfered. He fucked with the natural order of things. But when I say the natural order, white people's natural order of things. And that's right. I was in the middle of looking up my dates here. It was all in front of me. I feel like, why is Martin Luther King not the first name in this Selma article? There we go. Martin Luther King Jr. Yeah, April 4th, 1968. Damn, I was right. Oh, he died at 39. God damn. Anyways, my whole point is this, is thinking about the man's life. Maybe I should read more documentary about it. He just wanted to be a preacher. He just lived up to his calling. And one day he's assassinated over it. Like, look, I'm not trying to live a life where, I'm actually not trying to live a life where I get killed over it. I'm actually not trying to live a life where I piss anyone off. Problems are, there are assholes out there. There are like bullies out there. And sometimes you just got to tell them, hey, I don't like that. I'm not okay with that. And they're the ones who, if they're reasonable, they'll be like, you know what? I would hate that too. If not, they'll be like, no, I'm entitled to bullying you to make you feel like shit. And I'm going to continue to bully you and feel like shit. And since this Martin Luther King Jr. guy keeps jumping in and trying to stop me from bullying, I know that example doesn't make sense, probably likely didn't make sense to a lot of you, but my point is, what stopped Martin Luther King from being like, you know what, fuck this, I ain't getting involved. I could get killed from what I'm about to say. The boycott, the Montgomery bus boycott, that shit lasted at least more than a year. Holy fuck, that's a lot of work. I mean, he didn't give a fuck. Like, what was his incentive? Was he going to get like, I realized that I'm looking at his time through my eyeglasses. So it's like, you know, there was no TikTok. He was going to get no fame. He was going to get no likes for that shit. Like, what was his incentive? I'm not saying he didn't have any. I'm just saying I am trying to, from based on the little piece of information that I have about him, try to understand the world as he saw it. Would he have done anything differently if he knew he was going to be assassinated on that fateful day? Well, he probably wouldn't have showed up at the hotel. Or he would have showed up with the homies and wherever the fuck, I forget the name of the guy who killed him. Because apparently there's some confusion. But, you know, he would have probably, you know, figured out who's trying to kill him and showed up with the homies. And it's some niggas with guns. Yeah. But I'm just saying it's... I think about how I spent most of my life in comfort. There's no glory in what I'm saying right here, right? I don't think I'm any different from most of us selfish motherfuckers. But I think about how my number one priority in life is comfort, survival. I work a job, a cushy job, because, you know, it affords me to live a comfortable life and my Friday nights and record this podcast. Like, that's, you know. And when I, you know, every once in a while I try to give a fuck. And every once in a while, but I give a little bit of fuck to, you know, I'll see a panhandler. I'll, you know, give him some change, some shit like that. That's my contribution to the world. I guess I'm saying I do the bare minimum. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Did he see himself as living the bare minimum, or did he see himself like, I'm Captain Martin Luther King, I'm a superhero? Or was he just living his life? I think that's what I'm curious to find out. Granted, I guess I could read some books about it. I'll get back to you on that. Yeah. I wasn't meant to spend a lot of time on this, but who knows? Maybe I'll get back to this thought, because I hate when I ramble on at the introduction and then get to mid point of my podcast and then realize that's actually the part that I want to focus on. So yeah, man. So again, happy birthday, Martin Luther King. And do yourself a favor. If you haven't watched the movie Selma, watch it today. And yeah, we'll take it from there. All right. Okay. So for today's format, check this out. This is what we're going to do, right? We're going to go with random thoughts. Random thought might just be news. Shit that's going on outside, whatever, right? And then we're going to end with personal thoughts. And in personal thoughts, I'll explain the title of today's episode. All right? Okay. All right. Let's go. Shout out to Red Octopus, to DJ Red Octopus. That soundtrack you just heard, that sound clip you just heard, this is trying to liven up the show here. All right, okay, random thoughts. I wrote this, see, this is what happened, man. Some things will happen between now and then my next recording date, I'll put it in my show notes. Like, I'll just have a feeling, and I'll say, oh, this is something I could probably talk about on the podcast. And I'm realizing when I wrote this down, I'm like, fuck, I don't want to focus attention. Do I really need to? Okay, look. All right. Okay. I'm going to. Okay. We'll see how I feel. Okay. Fuck it. It's on the run now. So do it live, B-Blad. I'm laughing because I'm going from Martin Luther King to talk about this nigga, like the opposite of Martin Luther King here. Dana White. If you don't know who Dana White is, actually, I'm not. I just know he's like some, the president of the UFC? Let me see. Dana White, president of Ultimate Fighting Championship, all right? And in the news recently, homeboy was in, Dominican Republic. He was in some club in Dominican Republic. I don't know if he cared or didn't realize there was a camera pointed at him, but him and his wife were in the middle of a scuffle, of an argument, whatever. I don't know what the fuck, man. You know, but you know, he was doing. They were doing what married couples do, having a fight. And at some point, his wife hits him, and to my surprise, because like I said, he's the president of the UFC. Homeboy smacks her back. So that's been the ongoing. The ongoing story about, so he smacks her back. Now, I was shocked. Honestly, I was shocked in the moment because he represents an organization of mixed martial arts fighting. And I remember a lot of the people that I know that are into mixed martial arts keep trying to convince me, like, they're fighting for it to be considered, like, a legitimate sport. Now, I got to be careful. Not because I'm scared to get my ass kicked. Well, okay, partly because I'm scared to get my ass kicked by UFC folks. But but y'all need to... I shouldn't be scared of getting my ass kicked by UFC folks for saying things. But with that said, when I say legitimate, like, they want to be at the same level as boxing. They want to be as respected. Here, let me put it this way. You got one end, you got golf. Is golf a respected sport? Yeah, it probably is. Let's say hockey, football, all them dudes, the NFL. And on the other hand, you have... monster truck driver, right? So UFC mixed martial artists, and I understand they want to get closer to the same status as NFL, NHL, NBA, they're at, right? So I figured that image optic would be an important thing for this organization. So it kind of shocked me. This, I had a mixed emotion. I went from being shocked at his reaction to then being like, right, UFC. I mean, it's kind of like when I first learned that cops, 40%? Like, there's a significant amount of police officers who beat their wives. At first, I was like, what the fuck? But the badge. And then I remember, right, the badge. Right, how these guys were given an image of honor, like they were given honor without taking the time to respect these people. Okay, let me back up, right? I'm not gonna brag about the my white belt in karate, but every time someone has spoken to me about martial art, a lot of emphasis was put on self-discipline, right? Self-discipline. Go up to the gym for the training. But more importantly, how you develop a confidence that you don't need to convince people. Like, you know how to keep your hands to yourself. You know, Superman is not out there beating the shit out of someone for dissing them for being from Krypton. You know what I mean? Yo, man, fuck Krypton. And Superman's like, what'd you say? Laser eye shit like that. No, when you think of Superman, you think of he's a badass motherfucker. Sure, you can diss him, but he ain't gonna let some words or some bitch ass nigga or some bitch. Okay, that's terrible. Okay, so he ain't gonna let what was her name? Lois piss him off to the point of violence. You would think that, look, I could destroy worlds. One thing I'm not gonna do is hurt someone because they hurt my feelings or they hurt my pride. Cause there's a lot of dudes who are like, there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, but she hit him first. Fuck. First of all, if you're like, I know couples who are like that, That's how they resolve their conflict with violence. I get that. I don't endorse it. I don't condone it. I just know there are couples out there who handle beef exactly the same way as Dana White did with his wife. I'm not saying he's right. You know, I'm saying, oh boy, you're the fucking president of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. You know what? I'm not even a fan of UFC. So it is interesting that I'm taking this take. Maybe I'm just an old man disappointed at the reality of the world. I guess that's what it is, man. That's what it is. So I'm going to play this clip of Dana White explaining to himself how, man, I ain't stepping down. yeah, so I smacked my bitch. What the fuck am I going to do? I'm paraphrasing here, but I'm going to play him at a press conference explaining how, basically saying, yeah, I fucked up, but I ain't going to do shit about it. Here we go.
Are there going to be any repercussions? People are saying, you know, he's a big public figure. He's big, you know, charged this big company. Nobody's really talking about it. You know, are there any repercussions planned from the company or self-imposed repercussions?
Yeah, well, I mean, what should the repercussions be? You tell me.
You tell me.
I take 30 days off. How does that hurt me? I mean, I told you guys when we were going through COVID. COVID could last 10 years. I could sit it out and, you know what I mean? What would be the problem? The only, it's much like COVID, actually. You know, me leaving hurts the company, hurts my employees, hurts the fighters. Doesn't hurt me. I could have left in 2016. You know what I mean? I don't know. What's the do I need to reflect? No, I don't need to reflect. The next morning when I woke up, you know what I mean? I've been against this. I've owned this. I'm telling you that I'm wrong. And but listen, I mean, we've had plenty of discussions internally with Ari, ESPN. Nobody's happy. Nobody's happy about this, you know? Neither am I. But it happened. And I have to deal with it. And what is my punishment? Here's my punishment. I got to walk around for however long I live. Is it 10.4 years or is it another 25 years? And I got to, this is how I'm labeled now. My other punishment is that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people, whether it be media, fighters, friends, acquaintances, who had respect for me might not have respect for me now. I mean, there's a lot of things that I'm going to have to deal with for the rest of my life that are way more of a punishment than what? I take a 30-day, 60-day absence? That's not a punishment to me. The punishment is that I did it, and now I have to deal with it. And more importantly, you guys know how I feel about other people's opinions of me. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I know a lot of you. I don't know what you do when you go home. I don't know what you're into. I don't, you know, nobody knows you better than your kids do. Okay, my oldest is almost 22. So for 22 years, he's grown up in a house with me and my wife and the rest of our family. They hear and see everything. They know everything. You know, so whatever perceptions people might have about you, nobody knows better than your kids. And as long as my kids know exactly who I am. They know exactly who their mother is, and that's what's important to us. You know, this is a personal family matter that played out in public, and, you know, our biggest focus was our kids.
All right, Kenyo, this is longer than I wanted to play. The whole time he was talking is, okay, no, let me back up. I understand his point of, fuck you, I ain't into symbolic gestures of giving myself 3 months. I'm not going to lie to you and say, okay, I am wrong in what I did. I'm going to stop beating my wife, hitting my wife back. I get his point of, I appreciate the point of, I'm not going to bullshit you folks. This is who I am. I'm not going to do some grand gestures of giving myself 3 months off or stepping down would be the right thing to do. Something like, look, It's like I'm trying to defend him. But the more he kept, this is probably like the third time I listened to this thing. And it had me thinking of Jimmy Swagger confessing and calling himself a sinner. Hold on a second.
Channel 5. KXAN.
Is that it? Is that it?
Mike Snyder.
Is that it?
Top rated preacher on TV.
Nah, that's not it. Anyway, my point is, it's basically saying, but usually people like him say, I'm sorry that I got caught. And he's basically saying, fuck it. Yes, I got caught, but fuck it. Now you know this about me. Yes, I'm going to lose. People have lost respect for me, but go fuck yourselves. This is my, I ain't doing shit. I guess I'm bothered of him not having a sense of responsibility, a sense of, like, who are you? What do you stand for? What are you about? And here's the thing, too, right, is where I was going to continue, because, you know, I was not trying to defend him, but I was just thinking about this headline that I read. It goes, how did it go? Is this the, what is this? This is, okay. All right, I'm going to try to read this. Even okay. He goes, the headline reads, Dana White's mom says he has a history of domestic violence and cheating on his wife with ring girls and sister-in-law. His mother said that. This motherfucker beats women. And he goes, I will assume that Dana White and his mom aren't on good terms. Should have bought her that condo. Anyway. I don't know. Sorry. It is possible that they have made up in the decades since she wrote a tell-all book about him. Still, she said some of the wild things about him, which seemed to contradict White's statement that he and his wife have never been involved in any domestic violence situation. It seems they've always been fighting, and it's always over wife cheating via MMA junkie. What does it say? Hold on. Okay. Here's the rest of the article. Check this out. I keep forgetting this is my podcast. I could do whatever the fuck I want to do. Here we go. And now, I am going to... Okay, I guess I'm not doing that. God damn it. Let me let my AI buddy read this article for me. Okay, well... AI is taking a vacation. See this, folks? You know what I mean? 1 second.
In the past, Dana White has gone overboard during conflicts with his wife, at least, those were the words of the UFC president's mother, June White, back in 2011. That year, June published an unauthorized biography of her son titled Dana White, King of MMA, and in it, she revealed details about the vindictive tyrant he turned into as he rose to fame while building the UFC into the top combat sports promotion in the world. Mm-hmm. He's not a good person, damn, June said in a 2011 interview. He seems to have lost his character somewhere along the way. He mistreats people. It's terrible the way he speaks to women and treats women. June White's interview from 2011 raises questions about that assertion. At the time, she had a hard time with Dana's marriage to Ann and called it a joke. Everyone knows that he puts Tiger Woods to shame, June said, accusing her son of repeatedly cheating on his wife. Mm. Plenty of the ring card girls sleep with him. There's two of them I know for sure. He slept with his sister-in-law in my house, damn, which made me absolutely furious. I mean, he goes after any girl he wants and usually gets them, June said. His wife is, they're constantly fighting. The honeymoon, she gave him the worst black eye I've ever seen and nearly lost his eye. So I don't know if that's his way of handling that, but he's gone overboard with handling that. White has suffered no punishment.
There we go. I was going to say, White has suffered no punishment for his actions, and ESPN has been barred from saying anything negative about him. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, shit. I guess my huge disappointment, one is, I think about growing up, I feel like I've grown up with different versions of Andrew Tates, the Dana Whites of the world. You know, they put a lot of emphasis on, they measured themselves to you, they showed off their greatness by their ability to inflict violence on other men and sleeping with a lot of women. And we never, and but shit like, I hit women, I mistreat women. You know, this is, you know, I'm trying to explain this like I'm at the barbershop. Like I'm not preaching to the fellas. I'm not trying to, because, you know, I'd get the, well, I guess I wouldn't reach them anyways, right? But I guess I'm saying is, fuck, fellas, what the fuck, sis? How about we raise the standard? I guess that's what I'm talking about. Raising the fucking standard about what it is to be a good man, what it is to be a grown-up, what it is to be like, how about being able to control yourself, not allowing a woman to, not allowing someone that you can beat up, that you can inflict violence on, to control you to hit them back. Like having that discipline. Like I think of, God forbid, man. I'm thinking about when I think of Bruce Lee, he looked like the kind of person who would be like, you know, I could fuck you up, but he wouldn't hit his wife or his girlfriend. And if he was dating a toxic woman, he'd be smart enough to be like, hey, you're getting out of my life. But not to be like, yo, this bitch hit me first. You know, I'm just, I guess there's a huge disappointment going on. A lot of my heroes are actually zeros. Or actually full, that's exactly what it is, man. We're actually full of shit. All these dudes that claim to be pickup artists were actually con artists, no better than Trump. They just knew how to figure out how to put people in position in situations where they can coerce you into getting what they want. It's like, hey, that's a nice bike you got there. Be a shame if your eyes turn black, you know. Be a shame if someone were to whoop your ass for it, you know. Fake honor, man. Fake honor. People who don't, motherfuckers who just don't, who don't deserve respect and con the world into giving it. I guess I'm just saying, bottom line, yes, no, Mr. Dana White, you don't know me. He doesn't know me. Fuck it. I can't affect but you were on the list of people who I was told to have high regards for, only to find out that, man, you ain't shit. You probably got more cheddar than me. Anyway, yeah, but damn, it's just some discipline. You know what it is? I think about how I was growing up Christian and learning about Jesus. It's like finding out that if the internet existed, I would learn that Jesus was an asshole. You know what I mean? It's like there is no one deserves any honor. Everyone that I had high regards for, Zeus, all the Zeuses of the world were just like pieces of shit. The only difference between me and them is cash. See, what you're hearing right now is just disappointment. I understand why I put this Dana White piece in my random thoughts. It's just expressing a disappointment. All right, I went longer than I wanted. I dedicated more time than I wanted on this article, so I'm just going to skip to this next one. Return to work anxiety. So part of why I'm recording at 12 noon in noon is, well, one is I'm trying to get into the habit of recording earlier on Sundays. And two, towards the closer I get to the end of this day, the more anxiety I'm going to feel about the fact that we've been, tomorrow starts the official return to the office. So a lot of us public servants had the convenience, had the beauty, the luxury of working from home. And now they, you know, government is big about optics. And because of public pressure and all kinds of shit, they're really like, hey, you know, we need y'all to get back to the office. Now they'll tell you it's like, no, it's collaboration and all that shit. But okay, you know what? What bothers me the most about this whole returning to work is learning that I have people who I considered friends. And they, I tried to explain this to them, but they weren't trying to hear me. Motherfuckers I considered friends who jumped on this whole, yeah, you're just being lazy. You just don't want to go back to work. You just want to be, you know, and like they weren't trying to hear me when I said, bro, Working from home has been a fucking beauty for me. There's money I don't have to spend anymore. Two, there's interactions I don't need to have anymore. That just created more stress. See, here's the thing, right? Part of working, I have one of those jobs that, yeah, in addition to doing your job, they need you to manage your ability to deal with dumb motherfuckers, assholes. And I don't mean, like, a patience thing. I'm not talking about how, legitimate toxic human beings, and part of the job is dealing with that. Now, as a black person, I have to, in addition to doing my job, I have to do shit like code switch. I have to, like, I'm expected to, every once in a while, some white person is going to say or do something stupid, and I got to pick between not saying shit, or being Martin Luther King or Rosa Parks, standing up for myself. Hey, motherfuckers, talk to me like that again, and I will stab you with these scissors. Now, I'm exaggerating, but I'm not just talking about the racial aspect. I'm just talking about how there are people who are shitty to be around, and work just expects you to, like, you know, have a tougher skin, deal with it. Have a tougher skin. It's whatever. Like, it's like they really think that we're like one big happy family, when the truth is, yo, our best, if you leave us alone, we'll give you our best work. Anyway, yeah, I'm disappointed that I tried to explain that to the complexity of returning to work, and they just dismissed myself. They just dismissed me as, nah, you're just being lazy. Now, of course, they don't tell you, they're not saying you're being lazy. They're saying, no, you're just like every other government worker. They find clever ways to repeat what the belief that, yeah, nah, you're just being lazy. Get back to work. I don't know what's worse. The returning to work or having shitty friends who are like, who think that my opposition or my problems express the issues I have with returning to work is having them dismiss it as, nah, you're just being lazy. Get your ass back to work. It just drives me nuts, man. So where I'm at right now, man, I don't like it, but I accepted it. I'm thinking of that scene in The Walking Dead. One of Negan's men is basically bullying Rick, our team, our, you know, the main actors. If you haven't seen The Walking Dead, this analogy won't make sense to you. But basically, they're in the middle of mugging these dudes. They're in the middle of giving them the lay down, get down or lay down. Yeah, get down or lay down speech. It's basically, yo, we're taking your shit. And I like what one dude says. He goes, look, if you're gonna eat shit, it's better to just swallow that motherfucker. Don't waste your time chewing. You're just going to make it worse. Just swallow that motherfucker. I'm in. I've accepted. I don't like it, but I've accepted it. So I kind of swallowed the fact that I'm going back into work while knowing that it's a countdown before my blackness gets me in trouble. Being a black man gets me in trouble on work. Like, I know it's going to happen. I'm like, I work with people who are like, you know, relatively on the surface, they're cool people, but they're white Canadians. What do I mean by that? I mean blissfully ignorant about black people. I'm talking like, oh, I didn't know the N-word was a bad thing. Oh, I didn't know blackface was a bad thing. You know, like, that's the excuse to say, and it's like, okay, it's, I was about to try to describe what it's like to be a white person in Canada, but it's putting up with some bullshit, man. And yeah, it's putting up with some bullshit. And the thing is, after the death of George Floyd, my ability to tolerate ignorance, bullshit from white people has gone down. It's only a matter of second before that shit gets me in trouble. I know, I just, This is a constant conversation with my therapist about this shit. She acknowledges that's the reality of being a black person in a white working environment. I just question my ability to navigate through the bullshit. It's just that's in addition to all the stresses of working in the office, that's what's on my mind. But here we are, man. That's what it is, man. We are. I'm thinking of the Martin Luther King's life, and I'm thinking of Martin Luther King's life and me living this life of, I have this cushy job because it allows me to live this comfortable life. And I guess that's the price I have to pay is returning to the office. I don't know, man. I'm feeling a bit of anxiety, man. That's what's going on. The closer I get to this end of the day, now luckily, I don't have to go in all 5 days. It's just one day, which I can manage. But I realize. Yeah, no, I can manage coming in on that one day a week. But again, having friends, fuck, who just ain't trying to, like black people too, man. There was a time where I grew up believing in my teen years, I thought all us blacks were all on the same page, right? The only people we had beef with were the Uncle Toms. And now it's one of those, it be your own people. Now it's, black people are not a monolith, man. It hurts, man. It just hurts. So yeah, return to work. That's the thing for, that's where we're at. Okay. All right. Let's jump to personal thoughts. All right. Shout out to DJ Red Octopus. Hey, real quick, I should mention how I think I've narrowed down a DJ on Fiverr, two DJs. Actually, I'm at four DJs on Fiverr who I am going to hire to work on my beat. Two of them are white. I'm not saying they're the most qualified, but they're the ones who I feel like they know what they're doing, right? And the only thing stopping me from hiring one of these two white guys, one's from Germany and one's from England, whatever, right? And the only thing stopping me is, oh, look at me, the optics. How are you going to call yourself B-Black, talk about F is for fuck whitey and all that shit, and hey, Mr. White Man, I need you to do this. That's the only thing. That's my dilemma, man. I'm working on this shit, man. I'm just, yeah, that's where I'm at, man. I'll get over it, man. But it has me thinking about how, let that be a lesson. Let that be a lesson about employment equity. On one end, I'm refusing to do what. I'm just laughing. Actually, I think the dude, you know, to be honest, I'm not sure what his race is. I think he's white, but the dude who made my logo, human being I'm grateful to have encountered. He was really talented individual. And part of what made him talented is how his ability to hear me. That was the beauty with this, working with this guy is, I'm talking about the guy who made the logo for my podcast is how, what was the word I was going to use? It's how basically, homeboy actually gave me exactly what I wanted. And if there was any pushback, because there was pushback towards the end, because I wanted to make some revision, it's because what he created, what I ended up getting, scared me. it's like, homeboy, it's like I looked in the mirror and scared and got, whoa, what the fuck, who's that? That's you, sir. No, it isn't. I'm laughing at this is me saying, okay, yeah, you had an experience with a white guy, and then it kind of worked out, but okay, here we are. Okay, let's get to personal thoughts. Before we get to personal thoughts, I have three questions, that just some general questions that I was trying to answer for myself. Excuse me. No, I found him on Twitter and I filled the need to It will just go. I feel like this is like my 21 questions by 50 Cent, but this is just three questions I want to start off with. Is one, what are your greatest pleasure of human existence? So this is someone I follow on Twitter. I forget the account. And it just had me thinking about, I didn't answer that question, but I said, what if, because everyone, you know, everyone answered with shit that were innocent. But it had me thinking about, what if your greatest pleasure in human existence is illegal or involves hurting other people? Like, what if you're one of the unfortunate few on planet Earth who your greatest pleasure is shit that shouldn't be a great pleasure? I say should, okay. If it's illegal, I'm not talking to you. You know, I'm whatever, right? But I am talking about, let's say it's drugs. Or I think of that Kanye song where he goes, why is everything that's bad make me feel so good? You know? It's an unfortunate situation to be in. And it adds to my question, it adds to the answer of when someone talks about not enjoying life, shut the fuck up. Because that's probably one of the problems that they're going through. The one thing, like, you take pleasure off eating, I don't know, fast food. Them, it's doing meth. You know what I'm just saying? It sucks. Second question. This is me just a personal thought, is why do we, and I think this is more specific to me, and I says, why do I listen? Even more, why do I value the opinions of shitty people? I'm thinking about, there's this running joke around amongst comedians is how you could have a great set, right? Everyone's laughing their ass off, and as you scan the audience, there's one particular motherfucker who's just arm crossed staring you, mean mugging, not enjoying your jokes. And you're going to focus on that person instead of the fact that you had a great show. Why do people like us do that? Why do we value people? Like, okay, I guess where this thought came from is I was at work. And I was recently given an acting position. And I can't stop myself from thinking about all the white people who are going to hate, who are going to resent me for it. Like, I don't know if they represent the majority or minority, but I'm focused a little too much attention on those people. Oh man, you're fucking affirmative action here. They just needed a black. I don't know, man. Again, that's more of a me thing than it is. I'm sure a few of you might relate to giving too much values to the opinion of shitty people. I love this expression, this term that Stephen Covey used. He goes, empowering other people's weakness. And whatever it is, I'm working on it. Last question is, I love this one. Y'all still follow y'all's exes on social media? My answer is fuck no. My answer to that question was, luckily for me, social media didn't exist when my exes became exes. What I did the old fashioned way. I waited by the phone and considered stalking them. I never stalked any of my exes, but they had a strong desire to do so and, to change their mind. And I guess my point is I feel bad. I feel sorry. I feel bad for this all y'all growing up in social media age and how so easy it is. Like, the right thing to do, even that's a challenge. The right thing to do is block your ex until you have time to recover. Now, some people take that like, you know, if my exes were to block me because they needed time to get over it, you know, get over the relationship, I wouldn't be thinking about them getting over. I'd be, how dare you block me? I would take it personal. Like, some people take it as an insult that you're blocking them. I'm saying the temptation, I understand the temptation to want to stalk your ex, but I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. I'm saying that's unhealthy as fuck. I'm saying social media is like an enabler of, just makes it so easy to get into bad behavior. So, yeah. So, God bless the fact that social media didn't exist while I was growing up. Because I could see myself being a bad headline, a very terrible headline. Anyway. All right. Okay. Personal thoughts. First things first. Well, how much time do we have left? Fuck. I did it again, man. All right. It's going to be, I'm going to go over an hour, but here we are, man. Shout out to you sticking around. Okay, personal thoughts. First one, we're going to start with Neil Brennan Blocks. Neil Brennan Blocks. Now, if you're not familiar with Neil Brennan, he's a comedian, and he has a special on Netflix. And it's fucking hilarious. It's not just hilarious. It's in addition to hilarious, it's clever. He's a clever one. I've known... Before this special, Neil Brennan had a special called Three Mics, and it was dope. He had three mics. First mic was to do quick jokes. The second one was to make like longer jokes, and the third one was to just say some real shit, real vulnerable shit. And I remember admiring that. I remember admiring that. My favorite comedians are the ones who make me laugh and teach me something at the same time. I love that combination. That's the easiest way to turn me into a fan. Well, okay, it's not easy, but that's one of the ways to turn me into a fan. Anyways, during this special, what I was listening to, which I really enjoyed, one, I'm going to give myself credit. Lately, it's been difficult for me to watch a movie or sit through a comedy special. I don't know if it's because I'm so easily distracted. My fucking phone. Okay, I don't do this in theaters, but I have this bad habit of grabbing my phone and scrolling for social media and forgetting that I'm in the middle of listening or enjoying some special. So there was a lot of time where I had to catch myself. So with that said, I'm grateful that I was able to watch the special, and I'm thinking about had a few thoughts. I say thoughts, but this I'm not gonna say rehash. I feel like rehashing some of his jokes, but I'm just gonna butcher him. But instead, I was thinking of this one time where he talks about how he was talking about how his brother got into a fist fight with his father, and I was trying to imagine myself telling the public about a time my father and my brother got into a fist fight. Now, it was easy for me to say that statement because it's never happened. My brother and my father never got into a fist fight. They've had issues, but it's never been a fist fight. But it's being able to be that vulnerable, I admired that shit. I was impressed at his ability to do that. And a part of me wishes I can. Okay, I don't know if I wish I can, because I see it's like wishing I can fly while knowing that I'm scared of heights. My dad's a preacher, and I remember trying to encourage him to use more personal example in his sermons. And he couldn't get himself to do it. Like I didn't get it, but I understand it. He's like he felt like it was, I don't know. My family were a very guarded group. When I talk about my fans specifically, mom, dad, and my brother, we're a very guarded group. We don't like, okay, hold on a second. I would say airing dirty laundry in front of the public. I don't know. I guess I grew up believing that, yo, fucking keep your cards, your poker cards to your chest. Don't let anyone see your next move, even though they can predict it. But like being very reserved, that's how I grew up. And I'm trying to imagine discussing being on a stage in front of a bunch of strangers and telling them about a shame, something in our family that we're all ashamed of. I'm trying to picture myself doing that. And the key word is trying to. I can see myself on stage, but not doing it. I see myself doing it, but I'm not on stage. You know, does that make sense? Anyway, I'm just trying to say I was amazed at him being so vulnerable in front of us. Another comedian is like that, Gerard Carmichael. All my favorite artists, aside from making me laugh, allow themselves to be vulnerable, to say shit in front of an audience that might be difficult to say. And you're not saying that for shock value. You're not saying, no, you're saying shit that might make someone say, I can relate to what you're saying. I thought it was just me. Oh my God, this is how you make, you know, it's like, it's meant to, you sharing this shit, it's like being in a support group where you share your stories and you're not showing off, you're not, you know, trying to entertain, you're really hoping your story empowers someone else. I love this one poet, he says it well. He goes, this piece is not for me, it's for you. God gave me gray skies so yours can be blue. I forget the name of the poet, but if you Google it, I'll pop up. But, you know, some of us, I guess, even though I'm an ex-Christian, I still hold, there's certain things I hold on to. And I remember having this pastor talking about the power of testimonies, how your testimony can be someone else's, I like that, test I went through. It's your testimony can be, it's not just to be like, how the Lord was good to me, but it's more like, yo, I started from the bottom and now I'm here. And not sure enough, but it's like giving someone else hope that, oh shit, it's not just me going through this. I don't know. I guess there's something empowering of knowing that someone bled the same way. Someone has felt the same pain that you felt, that you're feeling. Anyway, yeah, so I'm a man. Yeah, I'm a shout out to him. There was a moment in his special that kind of bothered me, and I'm gonna call this audience member a heckler. But he was in the middle. Neil was in the middle of discussing one of my favorite pieces, one of my favorite bit of his or portion in his segment. He basically talked about being an older man who's single, and how dating life, being married, has been like a challenge for him. And there's a part that there's something that I could connect with where he was saying how he didn't say I'm undateable, but he's basically saying he was acknowledging that I know what's in me that's fucked up, that would make dating me difficult. And it was just admitting that. Look, okay, this is actually a bit or thought that I had is, look, man, all you people, when you find someone who's single and they tell you, and they have the reason for being single, and you say stupid shit like, hey, I got someone I want to set you up with. Yo, some of us single people are single for a fucking reason, and we're working through that reason. Stop assuming that we need to be hooked up. Anyways, so this woman, she just out of nowhere, Neil was in the middle of explaining how he's fucked up, and the heckler basically disagreed with his self-assessment about being fucked up. I'm sure this woman meant well. This is me pretending that she's listening to this podcast, and I'm not trying to make you defensive. I'm not attacking you. My intention is not to attack this person. My intention is, I hate when you're in the middle of explaining, this is a fault I have in me, and they're like, or this is an issue in, okay, easier example. I have a friend. She'll acknowledge that I don't meet up to beauty standards, the European beauty standards. I know that I'm not pretty. She'll say that. And she'll constantly get some girl with, no, you're pretty. Oh my God, you'll find someone. Fuck you, people aren't helping, man. maybe those people feel uncomfortable hearing that, and it's just, they're just making themselves feel good. So she just gave a response like, it's not you. And I call it heckling because it kind of interrupted the flow of what he was in the middle of saying some deep shit, and she interrupts it with, no, you're not fucked up. No, God loves you. No, I'm sure there's a girl out there for you, and blah, blah, blah. Maybe, you know, it's like, I wish these people would like, shut the fuck up. And I guess she wasn't in the mind. You know what? I'm making a lot of assumptions. I don't know what that moment in the show bothered me. Yeah, it's like, and that's why I'm calling this person a heckle. I'm saying he got heckled. I don't know if Neil Brandon saw it as being heckled, but to me that was like someone in the audience fucking up the flow of a comedian. Well, and for me as a listener, it bothered me. All right, another point that I had about his special is he made me realize that and how I don't know shit about depression. I've had my moments of depression, but I don't know shit enough to have an intelligent conversation with someone going through depression. Now, I don't know if throughout this podcast, if I might have said something about depression where it sounded like I was trying to educate people on it. But yeah, no, I'm going to apologize for that. But listening to his special made me realize that I don't know shit about depression. And one thing I know that I don't know shit about depression is because, well, A, I walked myself into therapy. I was able to crawl myself into therapy. B, as depressed as I've ever gotten, as the lowest low I've ever gotten, there's always been a feeling, a little, it might have been a very small, minute voice, but there was always a voice inside me that believed that this is just a season. This is just a chapter. Things are going to get better. It might have been a very small voice. It might have been a voice that I wanted to ignore and say, go fuck yourself. But the fact that I managed, but that voice was strong enough to be like, okay, yo, let's deal with this. Like, the reason I went into therapy the second time is I could catch myself feeling like, hey, I don't hear that voice anymore. I don't hear that voice. I started to realize that I don't feel like shit's going to get better. That's what rang the alarm. I don't know what happened, but the emergency crew kicked in, the emergency light kicked in, and said, like, yo, we need to address this. So it made me realize, because Neil talks about his own depression and how, yo, this dude went through a lot of shit to address it, right? But beyond therapy, like actual... I'm talking flew to other countries to address it and like that. I'm trying to get at is if there's one thing people going through depression don't want to hear is another ass or another motherfucker talking about, I know what you're going through. Have you tried singing? Have you tried reading the Bible? Yeah. No, they ain't trying to hear that shit, man. They're dealing with their shit and they need to deal in a way they can process it. And 9 times out of 10, it's not, there ain't no fucking solution person like you can give them. Like, they need to figure this shit out for themselves. The best you can, it's like talking to someone who's trying to jump over the bridge. Yeah, man, all that. Yeah, man, try positive thinking. Yeah, man, shut the fuck up. The best you can do is just be there for them. And you're hoping that moment of kindness on your part is enough for them to reconsider. Okay, you know what? I'm going to think about it. But don't attempt to lecture them. Oh, even better, don't. Like, recognize that. Don't try to make yourself feel better. Because, you know, if you're talking to someone who's trying to commit suicide, yeah, you're going to feel like shit. You're going to feel uncomfortable. It's going to be awkward. You're going to cringe and all that shit. But if you can't get over that shit, man, I'm just going to end it with his special reminded me that I don't know shit about depression. And if I ever gave the impression in any of my episodes that I did know something about, like enough to like talk to someone who's going through depression about it, if I ever said something that made it sound like, I know what you're going through, I apologize. That was not, I apologize. I didn't know better. The last point is, man, I watched that show with sheer admiration. Just, I wish I could do that. I say I wish I could do that while, well, see, this podcast is my attempt of being real with the world. But when I get out there, I'm going to go back to being the version of Be Black I believe the world wants me to be. And I'm going to get to that in my last point, in my last thought. Before I, Okay, so Neil Brennan Blocks, I recommend it. It's a dope-ass series. Did I mention, it's not just funny. It's not that he's funny, but his homeboy is fucking clever. He makes points. He might even say shit that you disagree with, but at least he presents it in a way that makes you consider it. Like, I'm not saying I disagree, but I love his point about liberals. There's a joke he got about how Republicans, they accept each other like whatever. You hate black people, whatever. Good enough for liberals, it's true, man. It's like He talks about, are you liberal enough? Like, it's always a competition. It reminds me, the thing that's going on with liberal reminds me of what it was like being Christian. You were never Christian enough. There was always someone to out-Christian you. You know, there was always someone, like, you could be like, yes, I believe in Christ. Well, hold on. How come your Bible is this small? You know, it ain't big as mine. You're not showing up every fucking Sunday like I do. I don't see you fasting. You know what I mean? There's always one motherfucker who's willing to be like, yeah, you ain't better. You ain't more dedicated, committed to your walk, to following Christ like I am. There was always like a dick swinging competition. That's a bad example. But you know what I mean. But anyways, yeah. Okay. Next item on the rundown sheet. I go, before I get to the last one. Okay, so it goes, is it okay? Oh, right. Okay. It's okay to, I got to read this one, right? You know what? I got to log in, motherfucker. I'll tell you what, I'm going to do that last because I have problems logging in. Not now. And I am going to go to the title of today's episode, 044, Souls Gone, But Their Voices Left. Their souls gone, but their voices left. And they the piece that I read to you was by Young Chris from the rap group Young Guns. And, yo, those guys are a fascinating group, man. I remember the first time I discovered Young Guns. I may not have liked or appreciated, and I'm not saying they were bad. I may not have appreciated all the tracks on the album. Tupac had the same thing. There are tracks that I wasn't, whatever, right? But the tracks that I did like, I liked. Like, enough for me to, like, wow. I remember first time I got introduced to Young Guns, this is me trying to give Young Guns their flowers, right? And I went to a barbershop, and I said, yo, y'all hear about this Young Gun rap group? And sheer coincidence, someone in the barbershop, in the chair, just happened to be a super huge fan, like a follower, like one of the disciples. I think he's an apostle. And homeboy was like, I wish I knew him. If I knew him now, I would have been able to ask questions about that piece that I recited by Young Chris. And he was just a huge fan, and he was just, you know, breaking down science about Young Guns. Anyways, so I guess first let me shout out by saying shout out to Beanie Siegel. It's funny. You know what? It's funny how Young Guns ended up, real quick, how Young Guns ended up on my discussion list. First, it started by someone on Twitter that I follow. Do I follow him? No, I don't follow him. But anyways, on my timeline, and he just starts thoughts on Bean's debut album. And I was like, oh, shit, I never heard his album. And there's a lot of rappers that are known. Had I heard their first album when it was initially released, I wouldn't have appreciated. And, Young Beanie's The Truth is one of those albums. But one track that was on Beanie's album that I really liked was called Die. Die. It's a dope-ass track. It nearly became the title of today's episode. But anyways, yeah. So I went from Young Guns to having my title play a whole bunch of track by Rockefeller, and next thing you know, I'm focused on North of Death. Now, North of Death is is an area in Philadelphia. I should probably say shout out to Philadelphia because they kind of inspire a lot of the content on this show. So North of Death is the piece that I recite at the beginning of the episode comes from the track North of Death. And it's only now, last night, that I realized that. And the only one rapping on it is Young Chris, one of the members from Young Guns. And there was something I can't explain. There's something about his flow, something about the music, the content gave me a sense, reminded me of Tupac. There's no similarity in the rap flows or whatever, but there was something about, I guess I'm trying to say, it was sheer, North of Death track was like sheer poetry. And I'm analyzing the shit out of it, right? But I'm trying to read what someone... of course, I didn't save the information. Anyways, I was reading the comic section. What is the point? Oh, right. Okay, hold on. I'm getting distracted. Okay, why am I talking about North of Death? Because he was playing... And when there's a line where he says, as I walk through the North of Death, they souls gone, but they voices left. And it just triggered some thoughts. See, that's the thing about rap songs or verse that I consider poetry. It triggers me. It gets me in a sense of reflection and contemplation. And that verse just had me thinking about how, what if life, because he says their soul's gone, but their voice is left. And I'm saying, what if life is just one big ass, the purpose of life, again, this is more about me than whatever. What if the purpose of life is just to put on a big ass show for everyone else? Sure, you might have one audience, or you may have like, or you might be a, I was going to say Hitler, or you might be Martin Luther King, right? He put on a show that, I'm not saying that he was a liar or whatever, right? But I feel like, what if, like, I feel like that, what's that guy's name? Shakespeare quote. He says, life is one big ass stage. Let me make sure Shakespeare did say that. Shakespeare, as I misspell the name. Quote, stage. Okay, the most famous speech is in As You Like It, Seven Ages of Man. All world stages, all worlds the stage, and all men and women merely players. Okay. Yeah, Shakespeare did say that. Basically, the quote is, life is one big ass stage. And I'm just going on that idea. I remember this another quote that says, if your life, if the purpose of life, if to, again, fucking up the quote, not even sure who the author is. He goes, if the purpose of your life is to entertain the God, then you might as well put on a good show. Now, I guess I'm saying is, we're all living this life, and unbeknownst to us, when we die, everyone is just going to look at it like a canceled episode, a canceled show. Now, whether you had an impact on people's lives or not, in the end, you put on a show. It was one big ass show. Like, you know, I'm not talking about meaning. Like, I'm talking about how Martin Luther King lived a life that we're talking about today. Some of us are putting on, and I'm not talking about good or bad show. You know, some of us are putting on better shows than others. Good shows are the ones where people leave from it and feel inspired or entertaining, like feel like they gained from it. And a bad show is the one that's like, what? That shit was, no one gave a fuck. or I'm thinking of Hitler. Hitler put on a big ass show, but we were happy when that it ended. A lot of people were happy when it ended, shit like that. I guess it just had me thinking, man, what if life is just putting on, that's all we're all just actors, putting on a big ass show from the rest of, you know, that thought crossed my mind where in the army, not in the army, but I'm thinking about all these war documentaries and and how the one army starts out with some gully, like a bunch of badass soldiers who are like, yeah, we're gonna win. And then when a core group of soldiers, like all the badass, well, all the ones who are like, fuck that, no retreat, no surrenders, when all them motherfuckers die, that's when the rest of us are like, you know what, nah, we surrender. Nah, fuck that. This causes... When all, like, I'm that kind of person. I can see myself in a group. If everyone else is like gully, everyone's like, yeah, man, fuck that. We're going out like 300, like all the soldiers. We're going out to the end. If everyone's like that, then I have no choice to be like that, even though I want to retreat. But if I'm surrounded by a bunch of people who are like, okay, I want to be home for Christmas, then I'm going to join them. I'm not going to be that asshole who's going to be, nah, fuck that, folks. We died to the last man. Okay, hold on. I guess it depends on the cause, right? If we're talking about slavery, yeah, I kind of want to be the soldier who's like, fuck that. I say I kind of want to be like that. Whether I end up being like that is a different story. man, I'm just talking about, okay, let me just get to my last point about Pitt and Michelle. So now I'm thinking about, what if life is one big ass show? And now I'm thinking about, what kind of show am I putting on? All I know is, what I do know is, those who don't know me, I put a lot of effort to put on a show, to live a life that someone won't have anything bad to say about me. The problem is, I do that at the cost of, I'm willing to do that at the cost of putting on a show that I will personally regret. Like hating myself, doing shit that I will hate doing, you know, that I, the only thing that I probably I'm working on, I don't want to be one of those black folks who let white people get off with, you know, being racist, you know, shit like that there. But anyway, whatever, right? All I know is those who don't know me, I put on a show that they'll like. Those who know me, I actually do the same, but I can't guarantee. Those who actually know me, I don't know whether they have something bad to say. I put on an effort that there's nothing bad they'll say about me, but I do know they will be the more likely candidate to be like, yeah, B was cool, but, you know, to say something. Okay, I'm not sure what I'm trying to say about that. You know, I might need to get back that on my midweek episode. All I know is, since I've been born, I've been trying to put on a show that people can appreciate. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. All right. Okay, let's get to the last item, and this is just something that I found on Instagram by one of my favorite content creators who I like to I love their content, but I'm suspicious of this person. I'm sure she's good people. I don't know. Basically, she's a, as soon as you put words like coach, mentor, and shit like that, yeah, I get suspicious. But this person is one of my, I'm going to go with favorite content creator. And her name, the name is on Instagram is Life by Alisa. And here goes, okay? I'm going to read it out. It goes, it's okay to be angry for being treated like you're broken because you're sensitive. I'm going to repeat that. It's okay to be angry for being treated like you're broken because you're sensitive. I remember when I first read that, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like this. Maybe that's why I like her content, because it always starts like, I always feel like she's going about to say some bullshit, and then it ends with, oh, okay, I see your point. Okay, it goes, okay. So it goes, next slide. It goes, it's okay to be angry because it felt like no one truly understood you because you're sensitive. Preach, sister. And it's okay to be angry because it felt like no one was willing to even try to understand you. Preach. It's okay to be angry that you were gaslit into feeling like your emotions were always too much. She's talking to me. It's okay to be angry that you struggled to speak up for yourself because it never felt safe to do so. It's okay to be angry about all these things. Feel it. Move through it. And then please know that this no longer needs to be your story, because maybe we did internalize all these beliefs that were destined to be misunderstood, that our voice doesn't matter, but we don't need to keep repeating that story to ourselves anymore. It was never the story we choose. It was the one that was placed upon us. Maybe your new story sounds something like this. Having tender heart in a harsh world is beautiful and brave. I think Martin Luther King was one of those people who had a beautiful heart in a harsh world. He was brave. I was made differently because I'm here to make a different type of impact. I'm made differently because I'm here to make a different type of impact. Preach, sister. Being empathetic and deeply connected to others is a superpower. If I wasn't so sensitive, I would be missing the depth and beauty around me. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be deeply connected to myself and others in my lifetime. What I like about this piece is she reminded me, and it reminded me about some of my anxiety about going back to work, is it reminded me that I need to, and I've never done this before, I need to be very careful. I need to be more careful about the people I accept as friends or engage as friends. Because some motherfuckers out there are just reckless, you know. And some people are just, people are who they are, whatever, right? But some people are just, won't return the kindness that you showed them. And I've learned to be more mindful, more careful about the people I interact with, how I do it, when I do it, and all that shit. Like, not everyone is Actually, a man was saying this. It's not, there was a man he was just talking about. He was also a sensitive type, and he was certain he learned how not everyone should be entitled to the real me. That's what I'm trying to say. That's what a biggest lesson that I'm trying to learn is when I show up to work is those motherfuckers are not your friends. There's a thing like everyone wants to show themselves as being a kind person, but in reality is don't fall for the trap of believing we're all friends. And I'm not trying to hurt people's feelings in doing so. Some people need to believe that, no, I'm a good person. That's why I deserve to be your friend. But it's like to preserve your own energy to that little, I'm in the category of human being who just needs to be more careful about what am I trying to say here? Who they consider to be friends. Everyone else is you keep them at a safe distance and a selected few, you allow them in. Sorry, I was just thinking about the eggs. I'm not going to try to explain how where babies come from, but I'm thinking about, you know, these billions of sperm and only one of them gets inside the egg. It's kind of fucked up relationship. Yeah, I mean, it's reminding myself that I'm not made for everyone and not everyone is made for everyone, I guess, if that makes more sense. Yeah. Anyways, I guess that's what my biggest challenge is about returning to work is having to fucking practice that, put that shit into practice, knowing that, okay, yo, I'm going to help you out, but this is how much energy I'm willing to expand for you. But, you know, because I'm not Jesus, because I'm not, yeah, man. I think for me, the hardest part to believe in the life of Jesus wasn't the miracles, wasn't the walking on water, is the whole loving everyone. Get the fuck out of here. That, to me, that's a miracle. Ain't no such thing, man. Nah. I'm not trying to say everyone doesn't deserve to be loved, but I'm saying that. Yeah, I think I'm saying that. Yeah, not everyone deserves to be loved. Some motherfuckers need to be shut out. Well, all I know is a lot of people just fall outside of my capacity to love them. That makes sense? I'm working on that. That's my challenge. It's working with dealing with people who just getting back to, I was just thinking about that. Getting back to the show, final notes is if life is about putting on a show, I have some relatives I've chosen to stop speaking to them. And they've chosen to take it personally as opposed to understand why I'm not speaking to them. And it was just pretty much decided. I made a strict rule. And this is relatives. So I need to be able to do that with strangers. It's just that I took it upon myself to be like, the show you keep wanting me to put on for you takes too much energy out of me. I don't want to do it anymore. I quit. You need me to be like, you know, they know what I'm, it's just deciding that I no longer want to be that actor. I no longer want to be this version of me that you enjoy, you know? And I wish they were able to understand that, but, you know, I deal with it, man. I deal with it. So, yeah, if I'm having that issue with my relatives, now I got to extend that practice, that same shit with complete strangers who I'm forced to interact with. Anyways, that's it. You know, I love this feeling of after a show where I feel like I've said everything that I needed to say. Like, granted, I'm an hour, 1 minute, 28 seconds. So, 28 minutes. So I went longer than whatever, man. I just love, like I said, this podcast is more for me than it is for you. And I feel like I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. So with that said, this concludes today's episode of Shut Up Podcast. Holler at me. You can find me on Twitter. I have two accounts on Twitter. One is bblizak and the other one is shutuppodcast.com or at bblizak. I guess I should say at bblizak or at shutuppodcast. No.com. Website is shutuppodcast.com. You can find the show notes and the list of topics and links. They're all on the website. To subscribe, you can use the RSS feed or go to Google or Apple Podcast. And a new thing I'm going to do is share a playlist, but I'll explain that on the next episode. I'll make a note to explain that. But yes, thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcast. That's it. No, okay, this is going to be the ending.